welcomed the parents' perspective. "I'm going away," Darlene heard 5-year-old Melanie say. She peeked into her daughter's room and saw her addressing a bunch of dolls and stuffed animals lined up on her bed. "I might be gone a long time, but then I'm coming back," she reassured them. "So don't worry." She picked up her favorite blanket and arranged it around them. "Stay warm." Darlene quickly tiptoed back down the hall, tears in her eyes. "Mommy," Melody called from her doorway. "Is it okay for me to take Belinda Bear with me to the hospital? She'll miss me too much when I'm away."
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about preparing a child for a hospital stay, and particularly when the hospital is far from home? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We have two guests joining us today who are very experienced with these issues. Ann Swire is the Director of Development and Public Relations at the Children's Inn at the National Institutes of Health. The Children's Inn is a residential, place-like home for children who are receiving medical treatments at the National Institutes of Health and their families. Its purposes are to keep families together during serious illness, reduce their stress, and foster mutual support among families. Anne is the parent of two sons, a 16-year-old who is a leukemia survivor and a 13-year-old. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Anne.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Trish Ayers and her husband, Reggie, are the parents of a daughter, Mason, age 10, and a son, Matthew, age 4. The Ayers family is from Oklahoma and is staying at the Children's Inn while Matthew is receiving medical treatment at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases for a rare immune system condition. Recently, Matthew received a stem cell transplant from his sister in hopes of curing his condition. We're glad you could be with us today, Trish.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and help others that may face this in their future.
What would you say is a child's greatest fear about being in a hospital?
Well, to answer this question, with the best insight, I ask my 5-year-old, what scares him when we go into the hospital? And he has experience now of about 3.5 years of going in and out. And he said, nothing. And I was so happy to hear that answer. But I think that's because we have worked through issues well and tried to handle them the best we could. And so I'm just going to explain fears that I've observed and ways to help alleviate those fears. I know that boredom sets in and the time will slow down. And what you need to do is make the most of it. Plan projects together that you never get around to doing when you're at home, such as reading a long story or putting a large puzzle together or doing a painting project together. Another fear is pain. And you have to be honest by making them aware of the high possibility of feeling pain, but that it will be reduced as much as possible. Help them to understand this by explaining the hospital is a place that they'll feel much better after we feel bad for a short time. And children feel better when they know what's going on. So there's a fear of the unknown, but try to inform them about as much as possible what the visit will entail and answer all of their questions the best you can. The child life staff can also help prepare your child for a medical procedure by using a hands-on approach.
Can you explain what the child life staff is?
Some hospitals have called them the child life staff, but others call them recreational therapists. They'll help familiarize your child with the medical equipment, or if there's a procedure that's going to happen, they can show that procedure with a doll. Sometimes that helps reduce the children's anxiety, and just knowledge makes them feel more comfortable.
What should we keep in mind when we're discussing a child's illness and treatment?
I think it's important to give them enough information so that they feel comfortable with what they have, but in very simple child-friendly terms that are appropriate to their age, not to confuse them with big, long words, but try to find ways that you can explain it in terms that they understand. What they need is enough to answer their questions, I think, but not always all the detailed medical information. A big question, is, as Trish references, is it going to hurt? And I think mm-hmm. you do have to be very honest about that.
We had a situation happen just this morning where my son told his nurse that he did not like her when she gave him a shot. She assured him, of course, that that wasn't going to happen today, and I know it's not going to happen for another month, maybe. And I said, you know what? It's not going to happen today, and it's not going to happen for a little while. But be ready, because we will have to do it again. And that's all I can do, is just prepare him and be honest and know that these sticks will happen mm-hmm. and hurt will happen. But it's to get better.
Would you give some examples of the kinds of support a young child craves, and then maybe suggestions of what a teenager might need when undergoing procedures in a hospital?
Both ages need parental support just by their presence mm. and by helping with distraction and entertainment. Even if your teen says they don't want you there and pushes you away, just your presence gives them the reassurance and support they need.
It's interesting. Mm. There are a number of studies that have been done over the years, especially since the Holocaust, and how children go through trauma. And the one constant that evidently has been found is, if the parents are around, that makes all the difference in the world, even in terrible circumstances.
It's less important what you're saying and more important that you're there. You've been here for several months, and your husband, you said to us earlier, was with you.
He did. He came here 7 weeks, and that makes all the difference in my son's recovery. He loves having Daddy there, and then he has moments, as any child, of wanting Mommy there. So we're able to appease him when we're both there much easier. It's not quite as easy when my husband is gone, but we're doing well.
You have another child. And so if you're both with your son, what happens with your daughter?
Well, that is why he was here for most of the time, because that was when my son was inpatient round the clock. And now we are outpatient, but we are staying at the Children's Inn, a hospitality house to the NIH that is allowing, it's our home right now, away from home, as we visit the hospital through the week. That way we don't have to stay in the hospital round the clock.
And so your daughter is with you at this
facility? She is. And now that we're outpatient, you know, we're able to make do. If for some reason the treatment doesn't continue as, you know, we think it's going to, then my husband would just come back up and so he could watch our daughter, which is math.
How would you say your daughter has been affected by her brother's illness?
Well, when we have to, of course, go back to the hospital or have another procedure, she's sad and wishes it didn't have to happen. But a parent can lessen these concerns by reassuring them with positive views that we are doing this to make their sibling's health better, and that we will try to keep her schedule with as little disruption as possible.
So when she's away staying with you, you need to have her homework from school and all that? Have the teachers been helpful with that?
We homeschool, so I keep her up with all her schooling. But when we've had longer stays here and I've needed to be with my son in the hospital, we have her scheduled, no matter where she's staying, with her same activities, such as ballet and gymnastics in our case, but just any of those extra activities that you do, if you keep them with their normal schedule, it just gives them that normalcy that they have.
That means when you came here, you found ballet and gymnastics for her to participate in?
Yes. In one of our longer stays in the past, when she stayed with family and friends in different states, yes, I did set up ahead of time classes for her in the same activities outside of school that she was in. And then I, of course, had wonderful friends and family also that were able to help keep her up in school when I wasn't there, since I'm her teacher.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on children in hospitals.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Trish Ayers and Ann Swire about what happens when a child must be hospitalized.
The challenge is in coordinating your time with the child. And so in our case, for example, my child was in a hospital an hour away from home, and we had our other child back at home. And so we just had to do a really good job of coordinating our schedules. We were there sometimes together, but more often than not, we were passing the baton back and forth between us. We actually had one of our friends kind of be in charge of making sure that the sibling, who was also going through his own set of stress and fears and anxiety about his older brother's health, that he was taken care of well. And we had that friend make sure that, you know, carpool arrangements were made and extra special play dates were made and special activities to keep him occupied in the absence of a second parent. And that's where that network of friends and family is incredibly useful and can really be a big help to the sick child.
And knowing that it's okay to accept that help.
Mm-hmm.
People want to help. And I was always very independent. I really didn't like to ask for help, but I've learned through all of this, it's okay to accept help and let people know how to help. And they will, because they want to. That wonderful network of friends and family can make all the difference in the world of the other sibling that's at home.
It's very important for the children to feel that there are multiple adults and parents around that are reliable and solid and are there to back them up.
While you're talking about siblings, they may have all kinds of erroneous ideas, or they may have lots of fears, or they may want to know what's going to happen if, or something like that. Is that something that you both sort of programmed into your lives?
Definitely. You do want to answer all their questions because, well, a kid's imagination can run wild if you don't. You need to be there to put those answers in their mind. Because when you mention hospital, no one thinks good of that, mm-hmm. even though much good does come out of them.
What about your child's playmates at home? Is there any way to, number one, keep them posted on what's going on with the child? Number two, involve them in any way in communicating with the child?
We would let their teachers and principal know the details you are comfortable sharing, and then discuss with them whether they're to share the information with the students or not. And that just falls back to people want to help.
I mean, little children are going to notice when a child is missing from class or from playgroup or whatever it is. And I wonder about, number one, how they're going to feel. It's frightening if the child disappears. And probably less so if they can make pictures and send them, or tapes or something like that.
That's very important for the friends, just like siblings, to be reassured about the child. I distinctly remember within the first week after my son was diagnosed with leukemia, actually several days afterwards, that the teacher sat down with all the children and explained what was going on with my son. There were several children in the class that were afraid that it was something they could catch, and they were really worried about that. Mm-hmm. And that was their greatest fear, that they would be next. And so a lot of good, accurate, age-appropriate information needed to be conveyed to the children. And I did go into the classroom to talk with the children. And following that, you know, of course, the best friends want to stay involved. Some of them came to visit the hospital, but they all, you know, in different ways made gifts and cards and sent those along. And although Trish is here for a long time at the Children's Inn for several months, our experience was one of more being in the hospital for 4 or 5 days and then coming back home. So we could then see peers as appropriate when we got back and reassure them that their friend was still there. But it's important to keep up those connections. It's very important to the child.
In your situation, Trish, do photographs help? Is that something that's been used?
Well, this time around, we set up a website to update people at home, and that keeps me from needing to email each and every person and remember what I said and who I emailed, and That way they can check in at their convenience what's going on. And the email has been a great asset for my daughter, too. We went ahead and set up an email account for her. She stays in touch with her friends, and I don't even know what all's being discussed. In fact, usually the moms learn more about what we're doing up here from their children than when I get the opportunity to update them.
How can we establish the most productive interactions with the medical staff for ourselves and for our child?
Well, the medical staff trusts that you as the parent know your child best. You need to keep them informed. We're our child's advocate. They are here to help get your child better. Staying informed and asking questions is the best way to keep on top of your child's progress also.
Does that mean asking questions of the staff, or does that mean doing research on the web, or all of the above?
All of the above, but what you want to do is make the best use of your short time with your medical team by having questions and comments and any requests written down so you don't forget things and have to wait until your next meeting with them, because that can cause unneeded anxiety. A good thing is to find out your doctor's best way of communication, and be sure and be there for rounds when the doctors and medical team do come on the floor.
Is that at a regular time every day?
It is at a regular time, and it is just a time I do not miss, because that's your optimum time for updates. And we also need to remember that our medical staff is human too.
And that must be a very tall order for parents who are frantic about their child who's the patient, the sibling who's at home, how they're going to do this and that and the next thing, and now they're supposed to also remember to be kind to the doctor. So that's a lot. And did you want to add from the standpoint of staff and past parent of a patient?
Just one little tidbit. Keep a notebook. It's a great way to have something at your bedside where every day you write down what's happening with your child. Let's say they're taking a new medication and you're just noticing, you know, they didn't tolerate it very well. You would jot that down and you ask the doctor next time they come by on rounds. It's just a great way for you to keep track of monitoring your child's progress, writing down questions, writing down new meds. I mean, anything that comes up. Everything is so new. You're just bombarded with new information at the beginning. And even as you go along, there are choices to be made. So I would suggest that that's a great way to facilitate good interactions with the doctors when you have time with them. As Trish said, it's limited. It's not available to you 24 hours a day, but you do have access to them usually once a day in a very focused, you know, it's about you setting, and then perhaps later with questions. But make the most of that time together.
I write down each and every person that I do come across and what area they were in, and it has served me well. When I need something, I know who to go to. You need to keep also that go-to person that you will learn in a long hospital stay who that go-to person is. And it's good to know their name. It's good to have their name written down.
It's always nice
helps.
Instead of saying, hey, you. Right?
It can still work. It will work. The nurses are extremely helpful in any situation. So you can always rely on them, because you do see them always.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on children in hospitals.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Trish Ayers and Anne Swire about what happens when a child must be hospitalized. What kinds of things can we do to try to maintain our child's normal activities, hobbies, social interactions under these trying circumstances?
Well, with so many compact technology gadgets, it's easy to pack entertainment and activities to pass the time, such as a laptop with games and DVDs, CD player, books on tape or CD, earphones for either containing noise or tuning out other hospital sounds or patients, a Game Boy or other handheld games. All of these provide a great distraction that is needed and become quite a treat for my kids to have, being that their time is limited at home with these tech gadgets. And for different items such as games, books, or hobbies, the hospital may have a library, playroom, mm-hmm. or craft room. And again, the child life staff or recreation therapist can help also with any of these.
So you've got to know, though, to ask.
Mm-hmm. But they'll make themselves
They should come around and introduce. Yes, it is just as while you're in there and a nutritionist will come around, as the doctors and nurses do, and social people will come in. The child life staff or the rec therapists will also come in. You will meet them. And there's lots of opportunity for social interaction with other patients and staying in touch with friends using phone or email. In our experiences, we have always had a hospitality house, such as the Children's Inn, which is similar also to the Ronald McDonald House, in connection with the hospital to rely on for a change of scenery, a place to wash your clothes, and it's just a place to get away from the hospital, or maybe to cook a meal, exercise, or just a visit with others going through similar situations.
I would think that's one of the most important aspects of staying in a place like that.
Do they often have structured group settings for parents of patients mm-hmm. at hospitals?
Some hospitals have parent support groups that you can go to for parents of a particular condition like cancer or something like that. That would be sponsored by the hospital, and you would want to ask at your hospital if they have a group like that. At a place like the Children's Inn, which, you know, there are many variations on this same idea, Ronald McDonald House and other hospitality houses, part of the purpose is to help a family and a child maintain normalcy. And so when it comes to a child's activities and hobbies and socializing, it's really structured to do that. So at the end, for example, we have a game room with a pool table, and it's a great place for kids to meet each other, make new friends, and so they can keep up friendships and not feel, even though they're far from their friends at home, they're making new friends when they're staying at the inn. We have a beautiful playroom for young children where parents can just sit in the rocking chairs and chat while the kids are climbing the treehouse and playing with the dolls. So that's a great way for kids to sort of maintain what they think is normal, you know, playing in a playroom and meeting other children. We have family programming, and other facilities like ours might have the same. We have art in the evenings that families can do together. We have music. We have a summer camp in the summer. We take families on field trips into, in our case, the Washington, D.C. area, so they can go to tourist attractions and other cultural activities. And so for some people, that's not necessarily normal, but what's normal is being able to be with your family and do something fun, and in this case, meet other families who are going through similar situations. And so in the course of doing an art project together, you might find that your child has a similar condition, and parents can chat about that. Part of our purpose is, you know, recognizing that children are going through a very difficult medical situation, nonetheless, to provide them with things that can keep their life as normal as possible.
When you're at home and you learn that your child does have a rare illness or disease, you know, that's going to have to be taken care of in the hospital, you can feel very alone. The greatest resource are parents, because they're going through it, and you realize you're not all alone in the boat, that there are others going through this and that you can make it.
Back home, they might be the only child in their whole community that's ever gone through anything like this, or the only child in your social network that has. When you're at the hospital or when you're staying at a place like the inn, everybody's going through a similar situation. And we've had parents tell us that one of the reasons they love coming to a place like the inn is they meet other children just like them, and they don't feel so alone. That can happen in a hospital far from home. That can happen in a hospitality house. It's a silver lining that children feel no longer isolated and alone, but they're connected to other kids. I'd just like to share a personal anecdote about the importance of keeping a child connected with their activities and hobbies at home. Even though a child might be in the hospital for a long time, there will be times when you get to go home. And in our case, our son had been on a soccer team when he was diagnosed with leukemia, and it was really, really important to him that he stay on that team. And so even though he was sick, we were determined to keep him on the team, which he was, and we got his new uniform for the season, and he went to every game that he was able to go to. And even though, as I distinctly and vividly remember, he might sit on the sidelines or even lie on the sidelines because he was so weak, he would go on the field and play for a minute or 5 minutes of the game, and it made him feel connected with his team, with his friends, and with his sport, which meant so much to him. And so knowing that he was not disconnected from that really gave him the hope and something to strive for when he got better, was to be a full-fledged, full-playing member of that soccer team when he got back home. It was just real important to him to feel like he didn't have to give that up just because he was sick.
We need to provide for our listeners, if you have any suggestions for resources we'd like to provide, where to go from here after they've listened to this conversation.
You can do an online search for a hospital stay and the facility that you will be admitting to. There are many, many hospitals on there, but if yours isn't on there, using another hospital site can be helpful in going to the hospital for the first time. And you can even call or go to the nurse's desk on the floor clinic that you will be seen on, and they'll be happy to give you pointers. And there is usually an organization or association related to the disease you're dealing with online. If you have that need, finding that organization or association is a great resource.
And if you can't find it by punching in the name of the disease, you call your pediatrician and say, I would like to find the name of this organization that deals with this.
Social workers are great resources depending on the hospital. Their job, among many things, is to make sure that the family has the resources and supports that they need when their child is going through their critical illness or in a hospital. And so they are usually a font of information about resources inside the hospital as well as resources in your community.
Well, you two have been fabulous resources for everyone listening. We really appreciate your being with us and giving us the information and the insight that you've both been able to provide. So, Trish Ayers and Anne Swire, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Well, thank both of you also.
Our gift for our first caller is a copy of The Little Book, a special book put out by the HSC Pediatric Foundation for parents of children with special needs. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 246. Also, tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the HSC, the Health Services for Children Foundation in Washington, D.C. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.